You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. If you listen to the program on a regular basis, you know that when you hear this song, normally a Vietnam veteran is going to follow it. So, and lo and behold, one joins us today. So, joining me is the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. His name is Jerry Joes. Is that how you say the last name, Jerry?
Yes, sir.
All right. First of all, rock and roll, always associated with the Vietnam War. Why is that?
The year of the 60s, that's what it was. It was just culture change.
All right. Well, before we talk about the association, and you guys have some cool stuff coming up here in the not-too-distant future, let's talk about you, and so we can learn a little about you. Born and raised where?
Whitefish, Montana.
No kidding. You know what? For those of you who've never driven through Montana or been to Montana, one, Montana is a huge state, right?
Yes.
It's, you know, I used to drive from North Dakota to California, and a third of the trip is through Montana.
Right. My dad was raised in North Dakota.
Was he? What city?
Hague.
Wow.
Little teeny farm outside of Bismarck, way outside of Bismarck.
Yeah, no, North Dakota farm country. So,
yeah, 14 brothers and sisters, and my grandpa came over from Prussia on a steamboat to New York and took a wagon train out and got 180 acres, and he raised his family and everybody there.
Holy, that's an American story, right?
Yeah, it is. And as a matter of fact, we have one brother of the original family left, and he's in his 80s. All the rest of them have passed away.
Wow. That's an awesome... That's a quintessentially American story, right?
When my dad went to the Marine Corps, he actually went to CCCs first. Then he got out of that and went into the Marine Corps and served with the 3rd Marine Amphibious Corps. Then my mom in Vallejo, where he was stationed up until he got out of the Corps. And they moved to Montana. He worked on the Hungry Horse Dam and learned to be a powder monkey. And we moved from there to Oregon to work on the Dalles Dam.
Oh, yeah.
And he lost his arm there in a dynamite explosion, and the whole mountain came down on top of him. But we stayed in Oregon. I lived in Oregon for 58 years before I went in the Corps. So that's where I spent my childhood, in Southeast Portland.
Now, what city do you live in Montana now?
No, I'm not in Montana now. I'm up in, I went from Oregon to Arizona. My wife always wanted to live there. Then we moved to Texas because got a better deal for veterans in Texas than me. We got to Raymond, Washington, where I live now, because the daughter started having grandkids and the wife wanted to be closer to her grandchildren.
All right.
Western Washington,
okay.
About 3 hours out of Seattle.
All right. But you were raised in Montana, at least part of your time as a kid,
yeah. Up until I was about three or four, then we went to Oregon. Then when Dad lost his arm, he had to go to school in Oregon, so we just moved there. And we stayed the rest of our lives in Oregon.
All right, so you grew up with the Marine Corps. What years did he serve?
My dad, he probably went in at 42, I think, and got out at 45, out of Treasure Island, got discharged to Treasure Island.
Right.
Same place that I picked up my discharge. I left Treasure Island, opened Old Navy Hospital, got promoted to corporal from Treasure Island, and got my discharge papers and my retirement papers from the 10th Engineer Battalion, that's now the 6th in Juan Island in Portland.
All right, talk to me about, the Marine Corps is on your radar from the time you're a young guy. What year do you graduate from high school?
I graduated in June of 68 on the 4th, and I was in boot camp on the 7th of 68.
How was your weekend?
With an airplane flying the Western Airlines in San Diego. That's about it.
Wow. All right. So you go to you fly to San Diego, and then what MOS do you get, and when do you head for Vietnam?
Oh, let's see. I went down. We had an Oregon all-state Oregon platoon in 1968 in boot camp, and we all went down together the 7th of June, stayed together until boot camp was over, went to BITS, ITR, and all that together. My MOS was 0311, so I went back into staging after the late boot camp leave. Went to staging, they transferred me to the 5th Division at San Mateo. So I stayed there until they put us back into staging. Then I went through the little, your lines and what you want to, who you're going to do. We got anybody in Vietnam? I said, yeah, my twin brother was in country since January. He said, well, you can't go unless you waiver your rights. I said, I'll waiver my rights. I'm not staying here stateside doing nothing. So I waived my rights, and I left and got in country the 28th of February of 69.
All right, and when you got there, where did you go? Who did you join? What were you guys doing?
You know how you land there at Da Nang, and they put you on the tarmac, and a big old line of you, and you count off 1-3, 1-3, 1-3. Well, I found off one. The guy next to my left went to the 3rd Marines. I went to the 1st, and I ended up with Lima Company, 3rd Regiment, 1st Marines, 1st Marine Division.
So, okay.
And I stayed there until I got hurt, and that was the 28th of June of 69.
So you're in country when?
I got in country February 28th, and I got hit a booby trap on the 28th of June.
All right.
Exactly 4 weeks of the
All right, so talk about what part, again, you and I were talking about the other day, but one of the things that, I've got the greatest education in terms of things I didn't know, that much about is Vietnam is such a different war depending on what year you were there, depending on what part of the country you were in, and just the complexity of the war. The complexion of the war was just so different, depending on where you were. You joined the 1st Marines, and then where are you guys operating?
We operated mostly out in Arizona Territory, Quanon, Booby Trap Valley, south of Da Nang, Hucal Bridge. We had bridge duty there for quite a while. We ran off and patrolled out of Victory, as we called it, where the battalion area was. All around, and that was the back side of, east side of, Dodge City, Arizona Territory. So we were close to that. Then we are in Operation Oklahoma Hills. The day my brother got shot, we were going out and they held up the whole battalion to let me know to put me in the rear till my brother got wounded, and, they wouldn't let me go back out till he went to Japan. We were all over that south area, south of Da Nang for my first 4 months anyway.
All right, and then just south of Da Nang, were you fighting mostly VC there, a mix of VC and VA?
A lot of VC. I mean, we ran into more of those than anything else. A lot of search and destroy ops long range patrols and stuff like that. So a lot of tunnel searching. That I was a tunnel rat too, because I was a small person. So I got to crawl down in the holes in the ground and look for people.
Okay. How are you ever writing ahead again after being a tunnel rat?
You just learn to live with it. I mean, I did anyway. I mean, you got an order to go down there with a 45 and a flashlight and some stick of C4 and dip cord and a lighter and you set your charges and do what you can do and go back out the back end of the tunnel and light that fuse and watch the tunnel blow.
Okay, so do me a favor. I had no idea that this is in your background. Walk us through going into a tunnel. right? So well, you're on a patrol.
Right.
They find the tunnel, right? And they call for you. Jaws up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They do that, but I was usually one of the finest. So I was walking point.
Okay.
So I just take off my pack and stuff and go down there with a 45 and with a flashlight. And you look around and you see if you can find anything that's left in there, or if not, you just blow the tunnel so no one else could use it.
Okay. Talk to me about. I've always wondered. You drop into a tunnel, and I would think you'd have to sit there for a few minutes till your eyes adjusted, yes?
You did. You had to get your night lights on and before you could move. But like I said, you just touch and feel if you can't. You didn't have a flashlight or anything with you. But you found your bearings. When you found your bearings, you knew what you had to do is get your C4 out, make it into a ball or whatever you want to do. Take a piece of blasting cap in there with a piece of dead cord and string it out to where you want to go before you can light it, and then you light it, and we'll get the hell out of the way and watch it blow up.
Did you ever bump into anybody while you were down there?
No. The last one I ever went down into, there was still had a hot fire going on, so they just got out the back end before I went into it.
Got it. So if those were inhabited, could you smell it right away from the cooking and just the smell of human life down there?
Yeah, you could. You could smell the rice and stuff that they had. And the last one I went in had a fire and had the timbers and the wood were still hot. You could see the glow and all that. But you didn't know how far that went back unless you went all the way back to the back entrance. There's always two entrances. There's the main entrance and a back escape route for them. So you follow that around, find that tunnel, then you can go up and get out, then you can set your charges three or four places and blow every hole so they couldn't reuse it.
What, did you get used to it? Is it like anything else you do in the Marine Corps? You get used to it, or every time you went down there was...
Yeah, I just took it as another job. You know, it was my job to do that. I went to school at China Beach. At the engineer battalion there for VC booby traps and landmine warfare school. And so I did that, got a secondary MOS, and that was my job, was blowing shells, blowing tunnels, and stuff like that as we went out on patrols and stuff. So I didn't mind doing that. It's just what I was trained to do, so I took it seriously and did my job.
Interesting stuff. Tell us a little bit about the cave complexes. You know, we've seen stuff on TV and different things. Everything in there from logistics to medical to chow to operations.
They were mostly down south with the Army where that whole city was down there. What we had up where we were at was just fighting holes that could hold, say, three or four guys at one time, you know, with their weapons and whatever. And that was it. I didn't find any giant bunkers or giant tunnels where we were at. No, I didn't anyway. I just went some out in Arizona territory when we were walking, and we just pulled up the column. I'd go down and see what it was, and whatever I could do, I'd blow it. And that's it, you know. Matter of fact, I blew one, and a foot came flying over the air and landed over by a bunch of other people. So, you know, what happens in war.
Right. The,
there's another thing that people don't realize about me. I'm not bitter or upset from what happened to me. I'm a war casualty. I was never mad at D.C. or the NBA or our government when all these guys came back and protested it. I looked at it as, hey, you're a casualty of war. You can't blame anybody for getting hurt because you people are going to get hurt in war. So why be that bitter and angry the rest of your life, and you're just a casualty. You learn to adapt and improvise and move on. If you don't, you're going to be, you know, sick the rest of your life. You can't do that.
Okay.
That's what I'm 68 now. I just, matter of fact, last Tuesday, or Monday.
Happy birthday.
And
happy,
I have never happy, let that.
Happy birthday.
I never have let that. Go ahead.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks. But no, I have never in my years since getting out in 69, retiring in 69, have let that mental problem what some vets got, the post-traumatic stress, get to me and blame everybody in the world for, oh, pity me, look at me. I have never had that. I never allowed myself to feel sorry for myself.
Okay, I want to talk about that here. But tell us about the day you were wounded.
Oh, we were out in the Kilo Company found a Chihoy. A DC guy surrendered, and he told them they he would take us to a cache of weapons and all this out here in south of Da Nang, out in Quanah Province. So Lima Company, 2nd Platoon and 3rd Platoon, 3rd went around as a sweeping force, 2nd Platoon went around, 2nd Squad, 2nd Platoon went around as a blocking force. Well, I was walking point for that to get where we had to go, and I hit a tripwire, and I didn't see it, unfortunately, and it hit an 81 mortar, and it blew it up, and it cut me from the left. Took the left leg off completely and mangled the right so bad it took it off 3 times and had also nerve damage in my palm and shrapnel all the way through my left arm and stuff like that. And they medevaced me back to first med at Da Nang. I spent, what, 2 or 3 days there before they put me on a C-130 and supposed to go to Guam or Okinawa, which one it was. But I was bleeding too bad, and but they dropped me off in the Philippines. I stayed there for about couple of weeks till they shipped me out to Oakland after getting me stable because I was bleeding to death and they couldn't put enough blood in it. I had 10 units of blood when I hit Clark Air Force Base right after taking off, getting off the aircraft. So I sat there and they cleaned my wound and doctored them up and left them open until I hit the States. They finally closed them in July of August of 69. Then I finally got them closed so I could start getting fitted for prosthetics and all that neat stuff.
All right. So ultimately, tell us about your what do you wind up with in terms of amputations? Above the knee, below the knee?
Both legs are above the knee. They took the left one. The left one went right off above the knee from the knee on down. It just cut it right off. And the right one got cut off below the knee and at the knee, then above the knee because of gangrene.
Well,
this kept spreading. They had to get ahead of it.
All right. A couple of things about it. Talk to me about things you don't see too often now. Talk to us about tripwires and walking point.
It's something that you learn to do, and some people learn it automatically. Like I said, they sent me to school for some reason, and you just got to look at the bushes and the ground and see if there's stakes tied close to each other with a thin wire or a piece of string or whatever. And unfortunately for me, I didn't hit. I hit 2 bushes when I pushed through them and it set it off. I didn't see that one. I've seen 3 more before I got hit, so I spotted them and tagged them so no one else would do it. When they come and got me and called in the chopper to turn me, I turned myself over and I couldn't get up. So the medic finally came and put 3 tourniquets on me. Gave me a shot of morphine, and I said, did anybody else get hurt? He says, no, and I said, well, I did my job then. My people didn't get hurt, and I was happy for that. So.
Point man now, and again, what company? You were with Lima Company?
Lima 3-1.
There you go. Lima Company 3-1. Wondering
third.
Always, man, always. My guest, we're going to get to this part here in a few minutes, but we're talking about his time on active duty during the Vietnam War, and his name is Jerry Joes. He's the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. What was your rank when you got wounded?
I was PFC when I got wounded. Actually, I was a private first class when I got wounded. I got promoted to combat promoted to Lance Corporal. And then when I medically retired, I got promoted to Corporal.
All right. Corporal, United States Marine Corps, retired.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now I want to ask you a couple of questions. One, where do you think that thing in you comes from? Lack of bitterness and all the rest of that, because there's a lot of guys that struggle with with anger and bitterness and all kinds of stuff. Where does your ability seemingly, and again, the mission of All Men Radio is post combat related mental health. We trick everybody into listening by having guys like you on, and then when they're not paying attention, we do the old bait and switch and start talking about post combat related mental health, and we trick their dumbasses. So where did that?
My dad lost his right arm. He was right handed.
Right.
Above the elbow. And I grew up with that. And I've seen that man do more things with one arm than some men do with two. So when I got hit, and I was laying in the Philippines, going to get ready to come back home, they called me, and I told my dad, I said, Dad, look, I've seen what you can do. I'll be all right. I'm not going to let this stop me from what I want to do in my life. And it never has. Matter of fact, I'm getting fitted right now for a new set of prosthetics at 68 because I want to walk again. It's because I don't want to sit in a wheelchair constantly like I did since 86 until I started this month ago. Because you got to have a drive. You got to have something that you care about to keep you going. You can't feel sorry because you got hurt. The ones that you want to grieve for are the ones that didn't make it home.
Right.
My brother got shot 6 weeks before I did, and he almost died. And matter of fact, his wounds that he got in Vietnam and the tainted blood that he got, he died at age 42. So I grieve for him because he didn't get to live his life and see his daughter grow up because of that aspect. What happened to me, I can live with. I'll move on, and I have moved on. I didn't let it bother me because why? You want to feel sorry for yourself because you got hurt? You can't do that. You got to get up and move. You got to think positive and have that influence that you know you can do it. Do it. Why let it stop you? That's the way I feel. I can't cease feeling sorry for myself. It's not nothing to feel sorry about. You're a casualty of war, and things happen in war that you have no control over. And that's why I believed in it. And I still believe in that. You can do what you can do, even if you have no legs or whatever. You can still be a functioning human being without feeling sorry for yourself or bitter because you're in a combat zone and you got hurt.
You know, Jerry, you're an incredibly positive person. Recently, a friend of mine, he's former, hell, you might have met him. His name's Mike Musselman. He used to be... A couple of years ago, he was a gunner for the 1st Marine Division. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Mike Musselman's an awesome guy. And he told me, he said, hey, you need to watch this movie about Elizabeth Smart, the girl from Salt Lake City that was kidnapped at the age of 14, raped almost on a daily basis for 9 months.
Right.
She has the most positive outlook, and I'm hoping to interview her. Because I think she has incredible things to say to combat veterans. And one of the things she says is, hey, sometimes bad things happen in life, right? Life is still worth living, and you can still be happy. Do not allow that to define you as a person. And your message is the exact same message.
Right. What you project is part of you. And if you project a positive image to people, they're going to see that, and maybe it will help them in life. That's been what I've been trying to say for 50 years now.
Wow.
I mean, it's the way it is. You can't let a negative thing happen. If it does, you just got to take it and reverse it and be positive and say, I can function as best I can no matter what happens to me.
All right, next question for you.
Okay.
What did you watch the Ken Burns, Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War, and you did not?
The 10-part. Serious deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it, yeah.
What did you think of it?
I didn't mind a lot of it. A lot of it, I thought they started going towards the end, blaming the American people and the American military over there for loss and putting us in a bad light, and it was mostly the government doing it. It wasn't actually the combat military there fighting that war.
Right.
It was the government that caused, you know, that problem, and they didn't really know what they were getting into. But when you fight a war for 10 years, it's like we're fighting this one for 16.
Right.
One is enough. You know, you got to realize someday you're not going to win this thing, no matter how many people you put over there. But don't portray it on TV that it was the veterans that did this and all the marijuana they had to smoke and the drugs and whatever. Well, why were they doing that in the later part of the years? Because they got tired because the society and the states hated you. But I know when I got ready to leave out of Oakville Navy Hospital, I walked across the airport, and I got yelled at and threw water on, spit on, and everything else, and I didn't do anything to those people. So I just went out and got on the airplane, walked up the ladder, and I sat down and came home. I ain't going to argue with it. You guys, you weren't there. You didn't know what we went through or what we did. Simple. Then you go back to what we were talking about a couple of days ago, is the culture between different years of the Vietnam War. Prior to 68, you'd never seen any of that. After 68, 69 to 75, that's when they started broadcasting all these guys smoking dope out of a shotgun and all that. That didn't make the public like us anymore either.
Right. So, right.
And that's the sad deal to the guys that sacrificed their lives, those 60,000 on that wall in D.C., they didn't die because of these people not doing their job. A lot of us did our jobs and did it well, but never got the gratitude for it.
Interesting. Did you? If your opinion on the whole body of work was that it was okay, there was something they did well.
Yeah, it was a documentary. I grant you that, but right. I think some of it could have been more positive light on the American people and the government, and especially the fighting guys
right.
that were there towards the end, towards the later years of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough after.
Yeah, it was, and they right. projected us as the, you know, the bad guys, and they shouldn't have done that.
Got it.
But the new one I like is this new, I don't know what the hell was it, General Danforth, the Chain of Command.
Yeah, no.
That's a good show.
Yeah, I started watching that a week ago, and I had a chance to serve with him and in Iraq in 2004. He was the chief of staff of the division when General Mattis was the CG and General Kelly was the assistant division commander, pretty impressive guy. And I'll tell you what, it must be pretty interesting for a guy like you knowing the kind of equipment you had in Vietnam and the way you guys fought to look at you know, to look at the differences.
Well, the technology and the weaponry today.
Yeah.
And the drones and all that, I wish we would have had them. We wouldn't have lost a lot of pilots and everything else. And the technology, by looking at a screen, you could drop a bomb on anything.
Yeah. It's amazing.
We could have had that. War would have been over before the 60s.
It's just thing to think about.
People don't realize the Vietnam War started in 59.
Right.
Actually, the first casualties were in 59. You talk to generations after Vietnam, they don't even know that.
Right.
They don't know when the Vietnam War was. They don't even teach it in school. There's no history about it. Not even history books. It's not even written in it.
Right.
So if you don't have people to go to that school, that Vietnam veterans, like for Living History Day, and talk to them about the Vietnam War or Korea or World War II, with some of our vets are still alive. They do that in Oregon a lot. And it's well welcomed because these kids that are seniors and stuff are thinking about military. They get to hear living history of a veteran that's been through this. So it's good.
Jerry, so you're medically discharged, and then what'd you do? You went to work, I'm sure. What'd you do for a living?
I ended up being a bookbinder for 10 years in the printing industry in Oregon, and I did that up until I decided to retire in '86. and I enjoyed it. It was a good job. It kept me occupied, gave me something to do besides just goof around and do nothing. So I went back to work, worked another 10 years, and then I retired again. So I had some jobs after that, but in 72, I finally got the job. It gave me a chance to prove myself and better myself by doing something I liked, and that was good.
All right. So if you don't mind, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how you got involved with the 1st Marine Division Association. We're going to talk about some of the stuff they have coming up. My guest today is the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. He is retired Marine Corporal Jerry Joes of the Thundering 3rd Battalion 1st Marine Regiment.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break. More of this coming up next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay.
Hold it, hold it, hold it. Hold it. We continue on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, All Marine Radio, and privileged to be joined by one, a Vietnam veteran, two, a recipient of the Purple Heart, and the Bronze Star.
With V.
With V, which is important. The, for everybody who knows, a proud member of the Thundering 3rd Battalion of the 1st Marine, Regiment, and a Vietnam veteran in 1969 in country, and the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. His name is Jerry Jones. Jerry, what? So how does the 1st Marine Division Association darken your doorstep? How do you first hear about them?
I was looking for something to do to get me back into around veterans. And I had a friend of mine, matter of fact, he just passed away. He was Jeff Wise. He was a sergeant major. At one time, he was third on the list to be sergeant major of the Marine Corps. And he lived in Springfield, Oregon. I was living in Portland, and he knew my uncle real well. So I went down and saw my uncle, and Jess showed up. I said, Jess, you keep talking about all these reunions and people you've seen in your past. How do you get involved with that? He said, when you get back to Oregon, call Gordon Morgan up. He's the president of the 1st Marine Division Association and the Oregon Columbia River chapter of the 1st Marine Division. So I went home, called him up, he invited me to a meeting, I signed up right there, and I was with them, and going, our first reunion was in 2000 in San Diego, and I've been there ever since. I worked my way up from being just in a chapter to the chapter rep, going to reunions for the chapter and come back and reporting to them. Then I got voted in to be vice president of the West, did that for 2 years. In the meantime, after that, I went to Arizona, got was chapter vice president of the West there, and I went to Texas as vice president of Central. Did that, then I came up to Washington, and the president called me up and wanted to know if I would assume the responsibility as vice president, because the vice president he had resigned or whatever. I said, yeah, I'll do it. So after his term was up, I ran for president and won it this last August. So I've been president since August. But it's something that I like, because this association was formed in 1947, and we've gone out from all World War II veterans to Korean veterans to Vietnam veterans. I'd like to see more Afghanistan and Iraq. You can do Shield, Desert Storm, Jonas, because we're losing our membership base because our older veterans are getting tired and passing away. But we need the younger kids with their ideas and leadership to come in and take this further into the future than what I have already started. Because the Vietnam veterans, like I say, are getting older, and their injuries are getting to them, so they're slowing down a bit. And unfortunately, we can't get the young kids right now to come in because they don't think we offer what they want. So we're pushing forward to Broadscape and the social media and all of that, so maybe we can get them to come and be a part of us, be part of the division of the Big Blue Diamond that they remember when they were there with it, and the camaraderie that they're not going to enjoy if they don't do something like this for the rest of their lives. Because you need that connection. If you're a military man, you need to talk to military personnel at times just to keep it up and keep your thoughts about you, because it's a good connection for life. So I've met guys now for 20 years. They're all different parts of the Marine Corps, but we all got a close relationship. So it's good. And I enjoy it. It's one of the best things I do. I get to travel. I go to Pendleton, and we got a reunion coming up. Got an anniversary next week for 5-6 days on Camp Pendleton. Then from there we come back. We go to our business meeting in April for 3 days. Then we go back in April to Colorado Springs for a week for our annual reunion. It's close to the August 7th. The Battle of Guadalcanal was in August 7th of 41. That's why we hold our reunion close to that date as possible, because it's history and it's connected to our World War II event.
So let me ask you. So people that want to find out about more about you guys, you're on Facebook, yes?
Yeah, we got a Facebook page and we got a web page. They can go to firstmarinedivision.org. I think it is. I got it written down here. I knew you might ask me that today.
No, I'm looking at it. First Marine Division Association .org.
Yeah, going on there, and if you'll hear, you'll see 50s. You'll see everything that's coming up. They got back issues of old Reed News on it and everything.
Your picture's on here, too.
Yes, sir. They just put that on there here about a month ago.
Yeah, look at all those medals. Whoa.
Oh, I admit it. Just 10 little ribbons.
Got the looking like Audie Murphy, for God's sakes. And then on Facebook, it's just First Marine Division Association?
Right. Okay. .org.
And so you can find them on Facebook as well. So
we had one of our past presidents set up a Facebook page.
Okay. No, you know what? It's interesting because the Marine Corps Mustang Association, I've had them on. The Marine Corps Combat Correspondents, which has, you know, an incredibly proud history. And Marine Corps Cameramen are a different association. They've merged. And they're all going through the same thing, which is the turnover of membership. And the way we used to socialize is not the way that young people socialize today.
That's really, I think we got to start listening to what they want and start going in that direction so we can have them join us. Because if not, it's like the 2nd Marine Division is almost gone because they can't get any young kids out of the 2nd Division to join them. We're trying to have a double reunion with the 3rd Marine Division, and because they're about where we're at from people-wise, so hopefully in 2020 we might be able to get a reunion with them and have a joint reunion with the 3rd Division. We're trying.
Well, talk to us for people that are you know, open to joining because of what a significant spot in our heart. And in their life as a Marine, the Blue Diamond was. What do you guys do? Are there, for instance, for me, is there a chapter here in Orange County, California?
Orange County's got two chapters. You got one in L.A., Orange County's got one. And the president of that is I don't know his memory, his first name. He's a Navy Cross winner. And, they got a chapter, Oceanside, South Southern California's got a chapter because they're close to the base. As a matter of fact, they're putting on a barbecue for the anniversary on Thursday the 1st. So that's how they do things. You know, and they're mostly all older World War II and Korean guys. Some Vietnam veterans are with them. But if you watch the Cam Lottery after you get out and after you've been out for a while and you miss it, this is the place to go. Find a chapter or just be a member at large and just come to the reunions and come to the anniversary. You'll meet people that you have a lot in common with and you can talk about different things, different military things, and who you were with, and they might know somebody, and it leads to something else. So it's interesting. They weren't in my company or my outfit, but one was in 7th Marines as a radio operator guy. Another guy was a Navy corpsman with recon, and we all get along good. We've been that way for 20 years, and we travel together. We do things together when we go out on the road, and it's fun. It keeps you connected to the military. It really does. Like going back to Pendleton, it's like going home to me. When you're 18, 19, you're on that base.
Right.
You're learning what your job skills are going to be and what to do. Then you go back and you see what they've done. It's just like going back home. And it's interesting, the improvements they made. That's the 60s.
That's amazing. The base is really, everything from the training ranges to the airfields, to all the different training cities they built up that resemble Iraq and Afghanistan villages. It's pretty amazing what they've done.
Yeah, we got to, three or four years back, we got taken out to one of those Iraqi villages and, they had a tank come over and breach the wall, and we're sitting in the grandstands. All of a sudden, this zip-line thing flies down past our ears, and simulated RPG round blows up the side of a building, and you had guys from Korea and me and everybody else are starting to hit the ground because we didn't know what was going on. I mean, I have a guy that was Navy Cross winner. He lost his right leg below the knee in Korea, and him and I were sitting against him. As fast as he could move with that one leg, he did. And we got him and I laughed for about a week on that one.
The weaponry, as you were talking earlier, the technology is absolutely positively amazing.
Just like I was reading on military.com and stuff, that they're going to start giving all infantry units the new M27.
Right.
As an automatic weapon, this shit.
Right.
They're all infantry men, just not one or two. That's going to be interesting.
Right. And also working on the helmets, to get a comm suite in the helmet so that everybody, you'll be able to talk. Everybody can hear and you'll be able to talk to everybody. It's just,
that, and then you're going to go to suppressors at times and.
Right.
Everybody's firing silencers so you could hear each other better.
Absolutely amazing stuff. I mean, if you've ever been a grunt, things like this consume your life. So it's certainly of great interest to us. Talk about the.
So it is to me, I like to watch the technology save the kids' lives.
Oh no, I'm with you. I love. I'm with you. I have two sons that are Marines, but. One of them just got back from deployment and he's living with me, so I always check out his gear. What's that?
Yeah, I got a friend of mine that she does my wife's hair and stuff. Her son's in the Marine Corps station with 2-4 in Pendleton. So I told her, I says, tell your son to call me because we're coming down there. So I got a hold of him. His name is Teddy is his last name, and his first name is Alexandria. And him and I hit it off real well. He's a nice young man. I said, well, I'm going to be in Pendleton 28. Call me. I'll take you to dinner. And he wants to join the association. I says, good. then you could talk it up and get the rest of your friends in your squad or whatever you're at, have them join.
Right.
Then you guys could be the future of our association as you get older. And that's the only way we're going to do it, show them what we do so they can understand the camaraderie is still there, but you just got to bring it with you.
Right. Right.
What's your point?
Right.
That's what I did anyway.
Right. It's interesting, social media now, you know, you can stay connected to your friends because, you know, we communicate in ways that we never, ever thought we'd, you know, communicate earlier. And so,
yeah, go back to the 60s and 50s. We've never seen this technology stuff on TV and Star Trek.
Right.
You never even thought you could have a phone to do anything like that in reality. So what? 30 years later, you're doing it.
Right. And you can stay plugged into your battle buddies and guys like that, you know. And in fact, there's five of my friends that I talk to every day. We have a group text and so from giving each other a bad time to talking about a political issue or something like that to busting balls about sports. I mean, right. But you know, the one thing though, and the reason I believe that whether it's the First Marine Division or Association or the Marine Corps League, there is merit to meeting other Marines that live where you live and being active in the community as Marines. You can still stay plugged in to your battle buddies and all that, but they're scattered around the country. I think there's great merit to being plugged into Marines in your community, and I think that's important.
Well, I agree with you 100% because before I left Oregon and got really involved with the First, I was president of the Marine Corps Recording Council in Oregon and Washington. I did that for 2 years, and I got to know a lot of retired colonels and sergeant majors and all these guys in the neighborhood or around Oregon, around the Portland area and Washington, Vancouver area. I always went down there. I drove 3 hours from where I lived down to Swan Island where I got the reserve center. And I went into the meeting and some of the guys that I know were still there. And we went out to lunch and we just started reminiscing about what was going on when I was there and what's going on today because they're still pushing forward for the young kids in the reserves and the young Marine Corps out of the Marine Corps League. So it was interesting. They working together, they getting along. One thing that changes is the active duty side and the I&I staff and the recruiters. So, but we even got the women Marines involved, World War II ladies and stuff that come to those coordinating council and help out and all that because the lady Marines are getting to be a big unit now into society because they've never been there before. They've had small chapters of the Women's Marine Association. Now they got big ones, and a lot of active duty women Marines are joining them. So that's good to see that aspect for women Marines to come in and have someone to relate to and talk to on their side.
Well, I just read an article this morning earlier about about a suicide study, and that women are 2.5. Women veterans are 2.5 times more likely than their civilian counterparts to take their own lives. And, and talked about the suicide rate among women veterans that is growing faster than any other rate among veterans.
Yeah.
And I would tell you that I think, it's staying plugged in to the warriors in our tribe. We're so comfortable around each other. You know, you and I have never met, right? And yet talking to you, you know, I feel like I know you. We've been to the same places. We speak the same language. We come from the same tribe. And I think there ought to be a special emphasis for women, to join these groups and stay plugged in, to our culture.
Right. I was at the Women's Marine, reunion here in Portland last year. I went down for that because I know a retired lieutenant colonel, and she asked me if I would come down. I met the commandant at the time down there and stuff, and they got a fantastic organization. They got a lot of active duty, and these ladies have been out since World War II and then Korea year and then the Vietnam year. They're all joining this big national organization now, and they're getting on board to make it organize and adapt to anything and stay connected to help any cause they want. And they do that. But they got to, you know, function, and they function well when they're in a big group. I'd love to have them join the First Marine Division because their planning skills are a lot better than a lot of men. And they do it well, and they do it right. They don't, they get an assignment, they take it, and they don't quit till it's done. But they need the camaraderie just like we do.
Right.
And a lot of them, unfortunately, like I said, Hattie Kelly, she's 95 years old. Golda, that I've known for 20 years, she just turned 92. And these ladies are not going to live forever. So the young kids have got to come up and just like to do in our outfit and join and keep their women's marine organization going and prosper by doing things. And a lot of them set up booths at Marine Corps West there in Pendleton and have a big display of women marine stuff and applications for the ladies on base to come by and look at. So I think they're going to succeed. I really do.
Again, my guest is the president of the First Marine Division Association. He's a medically retired Marine from was wounded in Vietnam, Corporal Jerry Joes. And Jerry, you got some big events coming up here. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, we got the 77th anniversary of the First Marine Division, starting on the 29th of January and going through the 2nd of February, and we get to see the base and have a it's a big banquet on Friday night, and the CG will be there, and the band will be there, and we'll have a cake cutting ceremony and everything. So we'll do that. Then we got the business meetings, like I said before, in Colorado Springs, where the reunion is going to be held in August. So it's going to be busy and trying, but everybody that I have talked to so far is looking forward to it because they enjoy going back to their home, as I call it, every year, every January anyway. It's fun for them. They enjoy it. They reminisce. They bring back their times when they were younger. It's good. It makes you feel better. And you get to be around a lot of friends if you met belonging to the association. They all go there, and they travel together. They have fun. And I enjoy it anyway, and it's just part of being in the Marine Corps. It's still the Marine Corps to you. You go there, you listen, you learn, you grieve a little bit of someone that's passed away. I just lost a good friend of mine here, 3 months ago from, unfortunately, all the tainted water out of Lejeune and Asian Orange in Vietnam. He died of cancer, and it broke everybody's hearts at knowing him because he was a hell of a Marine. Do anything for the association that he could. And that's how all of us feel. We miss Carl, but we all work together now and still now to make this association a better part of their lives that we can do things on and go to and enjoy it.
Talk to me about, so is there, if people are listening and they want to go and they want to is there a rededication of the colors, or isn't there a public ceremony that's going to take place?
Friday morning. It's usually on Thursdays. This year's going to be on a Friday at 9 o'clock. We'll take the redo the battle streamers to the flag. The CG will speak. Then we'll take pictures and all that. Then we'll break and end up going someplace else and come back that night about 6 o'clock. For our banquet, and I'll give a little speech. The CG gives a speech. We'll have a cake cutting ceremony and all that, and the band will play. And it's just, everybody just has a good time. It's what it's for. Then they take us around the base. They're going to take us to, this year, the first time we've done it in years, they're going to take us to range 116. It's a live fire range, and they're going to fire M16. I know it's live fire. The guys in the audience are going to sit there and look at it and go, hey, this is great, you know, if they haven't seen it for a while.
Right.
Then they're going to take over the third track, and they just put up a brand new museum for third track, so people who are in tracks will go there and look at the museum and look, you know, they haven't had one before, so it's going to be interesting for that group of people. So, then we got bus drivers, bus tours going all over the base 3 or 4 days, and stopping at, I think, 4 different mess halls to eat in on those days.
Wow.
So they'll get their fill of eating mess chow, but not like what they had when they were in. It's completely different this day and age.
So bottom line is that there's the 77th anniversary commemoration of the founding of the
right.
division, and there's activities all week though.
All week,
pretty
yes.
much.
Yes. Monday night at I think it's 6 o'clock. We have a welcome aboard buffet dinner. You come in, find a table, sit down. It only holds so much. But that is included in their registration fee. So it's a free meal for them, but it's added into the price to register to come to the reunion. But I figured we did it a couple other times, and it worked out well. We got more people to show because they're getting something for the money just to start off. Then they, like going to one of the mess halls is $20 and they get on a bus, take them out to, say, Pulgas, where the 11th Marines are at, and get to see the cannon cockers and see the weapons and all that, the static displays that they set up. And the older guys that were in that MOS enjoyed that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, it's, yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mean, just, the technology and the way it's changed from the 105 and the 155 to, the 777 now, the M777 now. So it's, I love that. And I'm like you, I love being around that stuff. And it's always good. That was home and the places are still the same. Some of the buildings are a little bit different, but that's home and to be able to see.
Your flat-tops were almost all gone now. I stayed in those flat tops for a lot of years before I went them off. But now they're gone. They got the new squad bays are built. They're 2 or 3 stories. There's two men to a room. The showers and all that stuff. It's just like a dorm room, right. Actually. Then they go out and they could drive their car to the training area. When we were there, we had to walk everywhere we went. Now these guys got permission to drive a car and park it to go down and train.
The standard of living is a little bit nicer let me tell you, I don't think it's better though. I think that, I know it's passe, but the squad bay was a great place and there's a lot of guys who get in trouble now, because they have too much privacy and they kind of get off the beaten path a little bit, where that squad bay, you were a part of it. Whether you liked it or not, you were in and amongst it all the time.
I liked it because you got to know your bunkmates better because it was all open.
Right.
You get up, you're on the bottom bunk, you make it, you top that gets down and whatever, it's part of life. But you end up meeting more people and becoming more friends.
Right.
With that type of an atmosphere. First time I went to a reunion in San Diego in 2000, we went out to San Mateo for fire demonstration with helicopters coming in, blowing up things with rockets and all that. Well, the squad bay I had was still alive. It was right down the road from where we were at, overlooking this little valley. And right next to that used to be the swap chute, and it was still standing. It ain't there now, but it brought back a lot of memories, and I was just there for 5 months. So it was funny.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe it. So, but now it's the 5th Marine, so the 5th Division got kicked out, and the 15 and 5th Division got took it over.
I used to be part of 15 when they were down at where they had been forever, and that is Camp Margarita.
Now they're out San Mateo.
Yeah, now they're at San Mateo. Yeah, that's what I tell my son. Yeah, I said, you boot. We used to be at Margarita, man. He was like.
I just think you drive out to Margarita because a friend of mine stationed there during Korea. When he would come to the anniversaries, him and his brother would put us in his car and they'd drive us around the base because they knew it better than we did at the time. So that was interesting. Listen to their stories of what it looked like back in the 50s. So.
Wow. My guest today, very graciously, has given up his time, Jerry Joves. He's the president of the 1st Marine Division Association, the Blue Diamond Association, as it's known. Jerry, first of all, I want to thank you for doing this, and I hope it's not the last time we do this. Anytime you have something going on, shoot me a note, and I'd love to have you guys back on as a...
Just let me know when, and I can do it, but not next week.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to do my best to get down to Pendleton on Friday. I have my sister coming in town, but I will do my best to get down there to the rededication.
That's Friday morning now. That's going to be Friday morning.
Friday morning,
now. Let me do the battle call.
Right. That's what I'll do my best, and I'll do my best to come over and find you and introduce myself. But
he's the only one probably in the wheelchair in the front row, so it won't be hard to shoot.
All right. Well, that'll make it easy. Anyway, it's a privilege to have you on All Marine Radio, and want to wish you all the continued best of luck with the Blue Diamond and the First Marine Division Association. So thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, and I'd love to come back if you ever want me.
All right. We're going to take a break. Okay. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.